Welcome back to Living on the Edge. Join your host, Jake Beck, Product Manager at Ambassador Labs. This is your podcast for all things related to Kubernetes, developer tooling, API gateways, service mesh implementation, and more. Let's get into it.
Hello, and welcome back to the Living on the Edge podcast. We are here today talking about platform engineering with a special guest that loves to talk about the topic. Michael, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. And thank you so much for having me, Jake. Appreciate it. My name is Michael Levan, and I do everything and anything in the platform engineering and Kubernetes realm. Content creation, consulting, live training, books, public speaking, and everything in between.
Yeah, so I think that's super interesting because it's not every day that you have such a broad aspect. A lot of times it's content creation and like the whole DevRel side or just like the platform engineering side. It's really fun to get to talk to someone that really has like meshed those two together and made quite the career out of it. So I am really curious, like, how did you get into like doing that? Did you start as an engineer and realize like, this is great and I want to like, I learned a lot and want to expand that knowledge to other people, or how'd you get into that?
Yeah, pretty much exactly that. You know, throughout my career, I've done everything from systems administration to software engineering. I was a director of engineering, so I played around in the management realm for a little while as well. And one of the things that I always knew was there's a massive amount of duct tape in the space. You know, any organization that you're in, there's always something, we got to get this done because of something, whatever. And I kind of always hated that. So what I wanted to do was kind of create content, teaching people how to do things with a quality engineering mindset. And from there, it just kind of went on where I was, you know, I wanted to keep writing code. I wanted to keep being in production, but I also wanted to have the ability to create content, dive deep into particular topics, live training as well, which is a really great way to do that. And I kind of was just able to juggle all of them because, you know, I got good at one, then I got good at another, then I got good at another, and I was just always constantly doing them. And even now, you know, I do live training every month. I do content creation every month. I do consulting every 6 to 8 months. So I'm always just like constantly in it. So I'm not, I'm always staying refreshed.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's not easy to juggle so many things, right? And then like you said, like staying up to date on all those things. I think it's really cool that you're able to balance all of that out and actually stay up to date and continue to, like, you just did one of the, you were part of the Kubernetes release team, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're still publishing a book and doing live trainings. Like, that's super impressive.
Yeah, I don't know, for better or for worse, I get bored real easily. So it's always kind of good to just always have new things going on, you know, and for me, at least, this stuff is very much a hobby as it is a career. You know, like this is the stuff that I really enjoy. You know, like in my free time, I enjoy writing code, building things. In my free time, I enjoy learning. Like I'm always reading. You know, even like I go to the gym 5 days a week and I'm the only weirdo there. Like I literally walk around with an iPad and like I read between sets just because like I enjoy like consuming a massive amount of information, just kind of sharing that information. So for me, this is just like, I just enjoy it. You know, people are like, what do you like to do, you know, in your free time? And I'm like, well, I like learning and diving into new things. And they're like, yeah, but like outside of work, I'm like, no, this is just what I enjoy doing. So,
and I think that's, feel like that's such a commonality amongst, especially software engineers. It's like, you find so many people where it's like, okay, they close their work laptop and they turn on their personal computer and start hacking away at their personal projects.
Exactly.
And I have tons of friends in like marketing and all that. And like, none of them go do all that kind of stuff afterwards, right? They're not firing up like a lot of their side projects unless they want to make a career out of that. But so many engineers, I feel like, just are like, you know what? My side project is just going to sit there. I don't really plan to do anything. It's just something I want to do. And exactly. It's always really like refreshing to be like, oh, I do that same thing. Do other people do this or am I a weirdo? Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, there are a lot of people that like to do their 9 to 5 and close their laptop, and that's totally fine. I just very much like to tinker. I very much like to play around and to see and to understand things and how they work. And you know, it's when you got a full day of live training or you got a full week of content creation or you're writing a book or whatever, you got to find the time to be able to do those other things. So, you know, you kind of fit that into your, you know, quote, free time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I guess just continue with what we actually were wanting to talk about instead of just our free time, as it's still engineering, but let's just dive into some of the platform engineering stuff. So KubeCon 2023 was three weeks ago, almost to the day now. Big concept around that was platform engineering with all the new tooling always rolling out and everything. I'd love to hear about like your experience as kind of the platform engineering guy. What maybe you had some big takeaways from it or anything that.
Yeah. So I think this is the differentiation between a trend and between something that's actually going to be a thing. So I can remember back in 2016, 2017, give or take, I think my title was like infrastructure engineer or something at this point. I don't even remember. And talking to the developers, it was a smaller startup. So, you know, everybody was kind of always sitting next to each other, et cetera. And one of the questions came up of like, hey, there are a lot of services in AWS. I don't fully understand the portal. I don't want to mess something up. Can we have some type of like self-service capability? And I said, yeah, you know, there's the Boto 3 library or the SDK for AWS. You know, we can create a script, maybe throw it into a CLI, give you a couple of options and subcommands within that CLI and, you know, just create services for yourself. And that's what we did. Like, we just like, we built this like programmatic self-service CLI to interact with AWS. And at the time, like that's now when you think about it, that's, you know, a piece of platform engineering, right? But like, we didn't think about it like that. We thought about it like we're just providing self-service capabilities. So the reason that I know it won't just be a trend is because like we've been doing it, right? Like when something becomes a thing, but you've been doing it for X amount of years, you know, it's just not going to fade away. And that was a big takeaway that I saw at KubeCon was, yeah, we're talking about things that we've been doing for X amount of years now. It just kind of has a name and a ring to it at this point.
Yeah. And regarding like that name, like you said, we've been doing it for years, but there's so many misconceptions of what platform engineering really is, right? It's like there's tons of misconceptions of you're just doing DevOps work or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I would love to get your take of like what truly like defines platform engineering versus like maybe you just only run infrastructure of like what is a platform engineer then?
Yeah. So my take on it is a platform engineer is an engineer with a product mindset, more or less. So here's the way that I see it. Well, I guess just in general, right? Like what are we doing as engineers? We're building software or we're building environments, and those environments in that software are being used by customers, right? Clients, whether you're doing something in e-commerce, whether it's a car company, whatever it is, you're doing something and you're creating a product and you're giving it to customers. If you're creating some type of SaaS, you're hosting it, you're giving it to customers. We're doing the same thing with platform engineering. The key difference is our customers, our clients, are engineers inside of our company. It could be developers, it could be IT, it could be cybersecurity, it could be the DevOps team, it could be the SRE teams. Whoever it is, we are creating environments, we are giving ways to deploy systems, software internally for our teams internally. So that's the biggest differentiation that I kind of see when it comes to platform engineering. You know, no hate on anybody, right? But it's like, don't look at the marketing stuff. Don't look at what the vendors are saying. Don't look at the buzzy stuff, right? Think about it holistically. It's what you've been doing, but for your internal teams. So for example, maybe one of your engineering teams says, hey, we're running on Kubernetes and we want to be able to deploy certain capabilities like Crossplane or Argo CD or whatever. Can you give us an easy way to do it? Because these Helm commands and these charts and the this and the that and the pipeline, this is confusing us. We need to have some type of separation of concerns. We can't be experts in this and experts in what we're actually supposed to be experts in. So let's go ahead and, or rather, hey, can you build us some type of interface? Right. So, you know, then you think of that interface and we can dive into all this stuff more, but you think about this interface. And that interface is the product. So now, for example, you know, even before the call, we were talking about product management and stuff. Now you have product managers that should be dedicated to platform teams, right? Because you're actually building an internal product that should have an SLA and that should be looked at as, hey, a client is using this. So that's my take on the key differentiation is you're doing the same thing. It's just a matter of who your client is at that point.
Yeah, no, I love that answer. I used to work for Target a few years back, and they built something that basically that you've described. And I loved it. It made the stuff I was working on at the time, it made my job easy because I just went into a UI and I clicked, I want to deploy this container, and it took care of it for me. Yep. And like just not having to manage all of that underlying like infrastructure and architecture that like was going on. I just didn't have to like, it was blind to me. Right. Like, mm-hmm. So then it made my job easier because I could just focus on the code I needed to write and ship to production versus now we needed to hire 4 extra headcount to just even manage only our applications when they'd really built this beautiful product that did it all for us across the entire company.
Yep. Yeah. And that's literally the point of it. You know, the whole point is separation of concern and reducing this, you know, cognitive load or whatever you want to call it from other departments, because this is kind of what ended up starting to happen. You know, now I don't want to get into the DevOps isn't a title debate, but it's here. So when DevOps more or less started to become a title, what ended up happening was the whole idea was we're going to break these silos and infrastructure teams and development teams are going to work together. But then what ended up happening was we tried to kind of like get the DevOps teams to do everything. And that didn't work because regardless of what title and salary you slap on somebody, one person cannot be an expert in everything. It's just not a possible thing, right? Like even if they're smart enough to understand it all and do it all, the simple fact is they're not going to be doing it all at the same time, all of the time. And therefore they're going to forget things. They're going to have to refresh, et cetera. So it didn't work. And that's where I think platform engineering will come into play because, and that's where I think platform engineering will come into play because it gives you the ability to actually separate these concerns. So like we're kind of going backwards in a sense, or rather we're just like going in this circle here where now we're getting back to what we were saying before. Developers are developers, infrastructure people are infrastructure, IT is IT. But we just have this new team kind of in the middle building ease of use capabilities for everybody.
Yeah. And I think there's like even like the misconception of like that platform engineering team knows all what's going underneath. And like, that's obviously not the case either, right? Like it's a team of multiple teams that you might have a Kubernetes like specific team where they are literally managing all of your Kubernetes stuff or, yeah. And then the people that actually do like the container orchestration side of it, like it's really a realm of a bunch of different teams that then make the like people writing your web apps really easy, like their jobs significantly, well, not easier, right? Like the web app part still, but they just remove that like extra layer of work that they're not comfortable really doing anyways.
Yep, exactly. And you know, with that, I love the idea of like for smaller companies that can't hire 50 people and put them into various subgroups inside of a platform engineering practice. I love the idea of like high velocity teams, or at least that's what we used to call them, where it's like, let's say you had 5 people, one person was really good at Kubernetes, one person was really good at QA, one person was really good at backend and front end. And you kind of had this small team, but like everybody had their specialty within that team. And I think that could be really beneficial for platform engineering as well. Because the way that I think about it is like you have 3 layers. You have the underlying platform. In the middle, you have the platform capabilities. And then up top, you have the platform interface or the interaction. So you got somebody on the underlying platform, let's say it's Kubernetes, really focus on that whole environment. And then you got people in the middle building capabilities or building interactions. So like those capabilities could be the crossplane and the Argo and the blah, blah, blah. And then on top, you got the interaction, whether it's a CLI, whether it's a GUI, another form of a UI, whatever. But you have 5 to 6 people or 4 to 6 people really working on each layer, but sub-specializing in each layer. And that'll make things far more efficient for the team as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I think you nailed it right there. Like that it's like that three layer, I think, like concept is really, really like what platform engineering actually is, right? It's that multi-layered there. It is a layered thing. And like not one person, even still, like you mentioned back to like the DevOps thing, it's like not one person is going to be good at all these. And if you think they are, like, you're just inherently wrong.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And you know, listen, there's nothing wrong with like for me, when I was working full time, like I enjoyed learning all of it. You know, like I would sit with the back end developers, I would sit with the front end developers, and then I would be doing my DevOpsy SRE job or whatever. So like I understood everything that was going on, but here's the reality of just human nature, right? Is like I'm doing my job. So if I have, you know, a full week where I'm doing front end development and I get really good at that piece, but then I don't touch it for 3-4 weeks, I have to refresh. Versus if you have people that are specializing in each part, it's just a far more efficient life cycle and flow of getting things out the door and getting things into your environment versus expecting one person to be really good at everything. And it's funny because, again, like you go back 15 years, everybody was kind of subspecializing. Then we kind of got into this DevOpsy fad where it was like everybody does everything. And then we're like, nope, this isn't working. So let's try something new. No, we're really not trying anything new. We're just going in a circular motion of through different trends, you know, which yep. is, it's funny and ironic, but
yeah, it's almost like the fad of like a full stack engineer, right? It's like, sure, you are a full stack engineer, but you have to take a week every time you have to switch context to right. relearn everything. So it's like, yeah, you might be a front, you might be able to do all of it, but realistically, you're not doing any of it that well until you take that extra week of ramp up time every single time you switch.
Exactly.
Which, look, there's no problem in doing that if you have the capacity to do it. It's just, you're like, if you have the capacity to hire a front end, a back end, and a database administrator, like you're just inherently going to push out stuff faster because people are doing one thing and they're really, really good at it.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. Yeah. And I would say that's the biggest part there is you want to bring people on that are really good at particular things. And if that one person says, you know what, I got really good at this and I'm not challenged anymore and I want to move from front end to back end or whatever, yeah, cool. Go ahead and do that. Challenge yourself, but just as long as you're focusing on that one thing and you're not flip-flopping.
You know? Exactly.
So yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's where platform engineering will come into play to kind of ease the implementation a little bit, just because there are so many tools and so many vendors and so many methods of doing things. And I mean, in my opinion, the landscape is a mess right now. I think there's too much going on. And it's like, I work for myself. So like, I literally get paid to just play around with new stuff. Like that's essentially the gist of what I do. And I still find something new all the time. And like, this is what I'm doing like as a living. So it's like, if I'm having trouble keeping up, I can't imagine how everybody else is feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I think you pretty much like led into where I was like, my next question was like just the whole Kubernetes landscape in general, like specific to Kubernetes, obviously like platform engineering, you can run VMs and everything, but the new, like the hot thing, right, is your underlying platform is Kubernetes. And it's an arms race of whoever can build anything, right, that like can get adoption. It's, there's how many different like telemetry providers, different like API gateways, different like everything. And it's just a continuous arms race of who can get it done the fastest and out the door. And here's it feels almost a little bit like when JavaScript got really popular and there's a new framework coming out every 3 weeks of this is the new hot thing to use.
Yeah, literally.
I love your take on that. I guess a little bit further even of like, what do you see as like the key tools like people actually should be using? Or like even at like specific layers of like, what do people really actually need to have a functioning platform?
Yeah. So the biggest piece of advice that I give everybody is do not even think about what tools to use until you understand what you need your outcome to be. So just as an example, right? Let's say I'm thinking and I'm saying, okay, the underlying platform, I need to be able to do a few things. I need to be able to run virtual machines. I need to be able to run containers. And I need to be able to do these on more or less the same systems. Okay. So that's the outcome. I have some older things that, you know, I need to run some binaries on VMs, and I have some newer products that I need to run in containers. Well, that could be one of two things, right? I could have ESXi boxes in a data center somewhere, you know, running bootstrapping with kubeADM and running VMs. I could run OpenStack. I could run Kubernetes because we have things like kubevert where we can manage VMs on Kubernetes. So once you kind of think about exactly what you want to do or what you need to do to make your platform work, then begin to think about, okay, well, we don't have a data center. We're probably not going to be able to buy one because that's millions of dollars. So maybe we want to scratch that idea. And then we think and we say, okay, OpenStack versus Kubernetes. Well, OpenStack can give us everything that we need. Kubernetes can give us everything we need. But for after further looking into it, okay, there's more iteration happening in the Kubernetes realm. There's more people talking about that space. There's more support out there. There's more forums. There's more documentation. There's more content. There's more learning capabilities. Okay, so boom, now we've narrowed it down to Kubernetes being the platform. But We didn't jump into a meeting and say, oh yeah, we need to build out this new infrastructure, and where everybody was like, Kubernetes. No, we piecemealed it together and we said what we needed, why we needed it, how we needed it, and what type of support we needed. And then we came out with, okay, Kubernetes may be the best viable option moving forward. Now, of course, that's 3 to 4 months of conversation condensed into however long I've just been talking, but that's essentially the gist of how we need to think about things. We can't think like, what tools do we want to use? Because this one's popular and because they had the best booth at KubeCon. No, that's you're going to create a massive amount of tech debt for yourself and you're going to hate your life. You want to be thinking about what you actually need to do and what you actually need to accomplish. And you may not have that answer 100% until you start implementing, and that's totally fine. But if you can get yourself 50 to 60% of the way there, you know you're good to go.
Yeah, for sure. Like you, like this outcome-based decision making, right? Is like you want, you choose your outcome before you make the decisions that lead to that outcome, which is a very often overlooked like aspect, right? Like so many of the times, like even when I'm like writing code, it's like I just kind of just start writing code because I like have an idea, and you just kind of start hacking away, and then you're 6 hours in and nothing works right because you didn't think about how you didn't think about the outcome of. Okay, well, I had an idea first, but what was the actual end goal? And then kind of work backwards. And like you said, it can take months to actually make those decisions. And like, that's fine, because you should be doing research. You should be learning while you make those decisions that lead to that outcome. But knowing what your end goal is like ultimately the like most important part, right? Like,
totally, 100%. Yeah. And to your point, you know, you can start. So here's what I do, right? Like a perfect example. I was just building out a Clyde tool the other day. And I knew I wanted to write it in Go. I knew that I was going to use Cobra for the framework to build the Clyde. I knew what I wanted the functionality to be. I wanted to have one command and then various subcommands to install different services. So when I first started building it out, I said, all right, I just want to see if this thing is going to work. So I used the OS library with the exec function and just ran bash scripts to install everything, or bash commands rather. And I was like, all right, cool. Concept works, but this looks silly. Let me import the Helm library and I'll build everything out via the Helm library. This way it's more production ready. So I knew what direction I wanted to go in. I wasn't 100% because I didn't know what was going to work, what I was going to have to iterate, if I wanted to use flags, if I wanted to just jumble it into one chart. I wasn't sure, but I dove into it knowing and understanding what I believe I wanted the high level outcome to be. And that's always the biggest thing, because to your point, I feel like in today's world, we don't really have a chance to think about that. And it typically comes down to poor management, to be honest. You know, no engineers are just bum rushing in. It's typically comes down to like, hey, we need 4 weeks to do this. And everybody's like, hey, do it in one, because something deadline that somebody made up and there's no actual real reason. It's just kind of there. And that's kind of what we find ourselves in, unfortunately, that harsh reality of like, we want to build something good, but we have to throw duct tape on it, which, you know, bringing full circle to the beginning of the conversation, that's why I started to do what I do.
Yeah, that's funny. I was literally going to follow up with that. It's like, yeah, that's how we end up when everything's duct taped together and you can't remove any of that duct tape without it all falling apart. Versus what you like, kind of like what you described, if you have that outcome in mind, like you still might duct tape some things together just to prove that it works.
Yep.
But substituting that out for actual functioning parts later on is significantly easier than duct taping it all together in the beginning and just being like, well, it works, but it barely works.
Yeah. No, I mean, by all means, use the whole roll of duct tape for your MVP. But the and it's so funny because I feel like we all kind of know that it never works this way, but we keep saying the words, or not us, but others, you know, you have the solution in mind and you go to management or leadership or whoever, and they're like, no, yeah, sounds great. Let's just get this thing off the ground and we'll come back to this in a couple months. We never come back to it in a couple months. Like, we all kind of know that. We just say, okay. And then 6 months later, it's like the whole thing's broken and we have to refactor the whole thing anyways. Versus, you know, I think that's just life, right? If you just do things right the first time, you're going to have a much easier approach in general. But, you know, yep. That's how it is sometimes.
Yeah, I literally had that conversation the other day. It's like, well, this can just be quick because we'll throw it away and redo it. It's like, but the thing is, every time we say that, we don't go back and redo it because then other things become higher priority.
Exactly. So
it's like, it's sacrificing the future for the now. And sometimes it's okay to do that. And other times it's like, no, we need to focus on the now because it's going to make the future succeed. Right.
Exactly. Yep. No, 110%. I think that's a good life lesson for everybody. Just do things right the first time and you'll have a much better, you'll have a much easier approach in life.
Yeah, a lot of times it's easier to sacrifice a few hours now than sacrificing days in the future because you weren't willing to sacrifice those hours.
100%. Yeah. And you know, I also think it, unfortunately, and this is where I hope platform engineering will help, because it comes into one of those things. I mean, you know, and we still see it, unfortunately, where it's like, oh, you didn't commit any code, or oh, your hands on are on the keyboard, or oh, you're not writing a thing. But you don't always have to be planning, researching, understanding, figuring out. Those things don't require hands on keyboard. Those things require thinking. But we're still, you know, a lot of engineers are still judged based on those minute things. And hopefully platform engineering will kind of help there as well, because at least it can make things a little bit more efficient from that perspective. So, you know, hopefully it'll not only separate concerns, but it'll kind of lift off that low hanging fruit for everybody.
Yeah. Do you see that's like kind of the trend for like maybe the next like year, two, three of like what platforming engineering is going to be is like it's going to be more of like that type of thing where it's really helping like expedite those, or do you see it kind of leaning somewhere else?
I think that for the next, I'm going to say 6 to 8 months, it's still going to be defined. So I have my definition for, and you know, everything that we've talked about, I have my understanding of what I believe platform engineering is. Some people agree with me, some people don't. For example, right? Like one of my biggest things is we see a lot of DevEx or developer experience and platform engineering. I think they're the same thing. I don't think there's a differentiation there. Some people agree with me, some people don't. I think that everybody's still very much defining what this thing is, because even though it isn't new, it is an emerging topic. And as with all emerging topics, everybody's kind of throwing their opinion in the hat, whether it's engineers, whether it's management, whether it's vendors, whether it's marketing, whether it's industry analysts, everybody's just kind of throwing things in the fire. So eventually we will, that'll settle down and there will be a consistent thought process to platform engineering. So I think that's what we're going to see for the next 6 to 8 months. I also think while that's happening, the unfortunate reality is there's going to be a lot of marketing that is going to confuse everybody around what platform engineering is. So, you know, for everybody that's listening, do your best to, how can I put it, not get caught up in the hype and don't let that confuse you. Just focus on those core things that we've been talking about, not so much like what marketers are saying in terms of what platform engineering is, because the whole idea is, with from a marketing perspective, is to hype things up, right? To sell, to get the idea out there, to get everybody interested. But unfortunately, sometimes that hype doesn't translate to what the thing actually is. So for the next 6 to 8 months, we're also going to see a lot of that as well. So everybody do your best to just kind of tune it out if you can. Then for the rest of the year, I would say things will even out a little bit more. And yeah, it'll just be a little bit more baselined. It'll be a little bit more streamlined.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I think you like what you described with like the 6 to 8 months is definitely like almost a big issue in tech all the time, right? It's like seems like every 3 to 4 years we get a new like fad or whatever it is of like it's where people start throwing all their money and marketing. Is like it's everything's really heavily marketed towards that. And I think blockchain is like kind of the perfect example of that. Like there was a great like use case for blockchain, yeah, but everyone just kind of went all in on it and just like extracted the VC money because they just attached blockchain to their company. And it ended up just like kind of dying off. And like there still is use cases for it, right? Like there's very important use cases. It's just attach it to everything. But I don't see that so much happening with like platforms engineer, like, because like you said, it's been going on for up near a decade. It's just it didn't have a title and it wasn't defined. And it's just like generally now, especially with cloud-based computing and everything like that, it's getting even just like more important and now being defined instead of just things people did in the background.
Yeah. And to your point, that's how you can kind of know when something is a fad versus when something's going to be real. Like, you know, for example, when you mentioned blockchain, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, there were everybody was talking about Web3, and now I haven't heard about Web3 in like 5 months. It's just like it just kind of like faded away and like nobody's like mentioned it at all anymore. So, yeah, like that's just kind of how those things go. I mean, even I think with the whole Gen AI thing, I think it'll be very similar. I think that there are just too many companies now being like, we're incorporating AI into what we're doing. And then when you kind of peek under the hood a little bit, like if you understand data sets, if you understand data models, if you understand how large language models work and how information is generated, and then you think about it, like, yeah, we've been doing AI. Like what was the first chess game? Like 1986.
I think it was in the 80s. Yeah, it was like something. When, yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah. So like the whole like idea of feeding data into a system and that system having the ability to learn based on said data, we've been doing this for a really long time. So now that once like Gen AI became really buzzy, everybody started jumping on it. But the reality is that it's. I think this is the difference between what's buzzy and what's real. Gen AI is being talked about as like this new thing, but it's not. It's a subsidiary to what already existed. Whereas if you take a look at like platform engineering, like, yeah, people are saying this is an emerging thing, but it's not a subsidiary to what we were already doing in that space. It's just kind of coming to fruition at this point.
Yeah, it's almost just branding what was being done for
right.
for a long time. And it's getting just more important now because the landscape has gotten more complicated and more confusing to like navigate.
Exactly. Yep, yep. Yeah, I mean, it's really all about minimizing as much confusion as possible. Yeah, that's the biggest or the best way rather to think about it is minimize and make things more efficient, and that's it. And I kind of think that's why I really enjoy it so much. It's kind of a beautiful thing when you think about it. Like for the first time in a while, we are creating an emerging engineering practice that is meant specifically to help others. And that's a cool thing when you think about it. You know, like we are, it's like engineering for good in a sense, you know, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not, it's because like, I mean, if you look at just like the landscape of technology, right? It's like what's led technological growth is essentially consumerism. I mean, like, you look at like the Apples and the Microsofts and everything, and like their goal is to build technology just that's mainly to be consumed by non-technology people. You look at what you're talking about with like platform engineering, it's like, this is all, we're building something which obviously like people are going to pay for and like consume, but at the end of the day, it's there to make the other developers' lives easier. Like, it's not there to be consumed by the masses. It's there, like you said, like, for good, because the landscape has gotten more complicated, so we need to do something to ease that confusion. Well, and it's not necessarily that it's just confusing. It's just there's so many different things going on in the background that just one person can't handle it anymore. And if you try to, like circling back to a lot of what we talked about earlier, it's just, you need that like separation now. And that's exactly where like this is becoming a popular topic.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, you pointed out something that I think is super important, especially in the open source and overall cloud native space. Look, at the end of the day, everybody's got to get paid. Everybody's got to get paid for what they do. Everybody's got to get paid for what they're putting out. And because of that, what everybody needs to understand is like, yeah, there may be money flying around in this platform engineering space, but it's not going to be it's not going to be, to your point, like the consumerism of, you know, creating specific platforms, creating specific environments, et cetera. Like, it's really going to be geared towards actually helping people. Are vendors going to get their lick, and are people going to, you know, jump in and try to make money from it? Sure, of course. But at the end of the day, you know, the actual practice of platform engineering is to ultimately help others. You were right about modern consumerism. Everybody still needs to make money. Vendors are still going to try to make money off of platform engineering. Everybody's got to get paid. But at the end of the day, it does still have a particular good purpose of helping others.
The beauty of it, right? Like it doesn't matter if there is like financial gain at the end of it to me, as long as there is like net good, even like outside, like people like to like say, like people are projecting. I think Mr. Beast, if you're familiar with, I'm sure you are, with who that is, like a lot of people get upset when he goes and does like charitable things and does it for like making money, which is like, at the end of the day, like, I don't think it matters that he makes money doing those things, because he does end up helping more people than like he makes money. And I think at the end of the day, like, that's really what matters and is like essentially the goal. Like, people are going to make money, and it is what it is. As long as people, there's a net gain, I have no qualms with it myself.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. And look, you know, I see this a lot in the open source community and stuff as well, and I kind of get it, but I believe that we all need to do a better job at understanding the way that the world works sometimes. So like, I'll give you an example, right? When you walk into a car dealership, you're talking to a salesperson, you know what they're trying to do. They're not your friend. They want to make money, and you want to get the best deal. Regardless of how many handshakes and ha-ha's y'all do, everybody wants to make money and everybody wants to get the best deal. That's the way that the world works. So yes, in the platform engineering realm, will people make money off of it? Will vendors make money off of it? Yes. But at the end of the day, as long as the thing is helping, it's fine. Because, you know, for everybody that says, oh, well, this shouldn't be sponsored, or this shouldn't make money, or blah, 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 I'll tell them, okay, you stop making money. You don't make money for your mortgage. Let me know how it goes. Everybody's got to get paid, right? That's just the way that it works.
Yeah. And I think that's the really like interesting, like how things have transitioned. I feel like in like early 2020, there was the big push for open sourcing everything. And everything needs to be open source. And especially just because, like, I think Kubernetes in and of itself, because it is open source, people kind of felt all the tools that interact with it should also be like free and easy to use and all that. And we're kind of like taking that shift back where it's like, okay, well, we tried that for a while. And it's really, at the end of the day, like, someone's got to make money to keep maintaining those open source like platforms, right? And right, if they're all just right, free, those companies are just going to die off and those things aren't going to exist anymore. So right, we're kind of like seeing this shift back where it's like a lot of the stuff is becoming closed source, or things are being built on top of these open source products. And there's a lot of pushback of, well, why isn't this free? And it's like, well, this wouldn't exist if it was free.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's only the engineering space, right? Like, you don't walk into like Verizon Wireless and you're like, hey, give me that iPhone.
Yep.
Why isn't it free? Like, you kind of just know, like, hey, you got to pay for this. Or like when you walk into a restaurant, you're like, this should be free. No, that's not the way that the world works. Yeah.
And right? I think your car dealership thing was the perfect. It's like there's no place you're ever going to feel that more than at a car dealership where it's like this person wants to sell me a car and I'm here to buy a car and we're going head to head to see who wins of. And at the end of the day, the car dealership always wins, right? Like they always win. It's just making sure you feel like you won.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And you know, listen, I get it. Like as an engineer, when a marketer comes at me or a salesperson comes at me and they're like, oh, check this out because of something, something shift left and something, something single pane of glass. It's icky. I don't like it either. However, I understand that at the end of the day, a vendor needs to make money to keep a product going. That's the way that the world works. Otherwise, we wouldn't have these tools. Or you know what? Maybe we would, but it would just be three major big companies making them. And then all we would have is a major monopoly.
Yep.
So it's you gotta pick which one you want more, you know?
Yeah. Like I completely get it. Like it always feels icky if it's like, oh, we saw you use this tool. Here's like we can help you use it. And it's like kind of annoying, but at the same day, it's like without people, like I know that it's the marketers' jobs, right? Like they're doing their job reaching out to us and like trying to sell us things. And it's like at the end of the day, it's like I do use it. I do appreciate it. And like it's that balancing act, right? Of like, I'm an engineer. I don't want to deal with sales. Like, go deal with the people that buy those things for me. Don't talk to me. But
right.
But you appreciate it at the same time because it's like, I do like using that product. It makes my job easier. Maybe we should pay for this.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. Yeah. And you know, that's just how it is in this space. You know, would it be nice if everything was just free and collaborative and yada, yada? Yeah. But then we would just like, let's say the world was like that. We would just have a failing financial crisis, right? Like everything would be slums, like it would be third world.
Yep.
So I understand when people are saying those things, but at the same time, like I think about it a little bit more in depth, like what would the stock market look like? And like, what would the United States look
taking
like?
Taking that like tech aspect and applying it to the real world. Right. And like at the end of the day, like exactly. We're all trying to make buy in the world and like we're doing our jobs. And it is like really always like interesting to see like how just doing our everyday job, like stuff is comparable at like a small market, essentially compared to like what real life really is. as much as like you, it's not just like, you have to really think about it, right? At the end of the day, it's like how it applies to the real world. And it's like, okay, take a step back. Like, I love these open source products. Who made these? And like, that's what you have to look at. So
exactly. Yep. 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 Yeah. No, totally agree with you.
Awesome. Well, I think we are running out of time here. It's been great talking to you. I mean, we've talked a lot about platform engineering and even just how it applies to just regular real world stuff. It's been I've had a great time. I hope you have too. Is there anything you want to promote for yourself? Give your socials a shout out.
Yeah. I mean, I would just say the biggest thing is go to LinkedIn, check out what I'm doing on LinkedIn. I pretty much post everything from my courses to my books to my free stuff and everything in between. Just go to LinkedIn and you'll see everything there on my page. Yeah. And I also post stuff on Twitter and everything, but a little bit less frequent.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate your time, Michael. It's been great chatting with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.